Welcome back to NCAA Bracket Busters with Weeds and Mac, a special podcast series from Pod Topics Chattanooga that's being produced in collaboration with thechattanoogan.com. As we shared with you last week, this limited-run series is focused on exploring all the happenings with the 2023 NCAA Men's Basketball Tournament. NCAA Bracket Busters with Weeds and Mac features Mark Wiedmer, a member of the Tennessee Sports Writers Hall of Fame, and Mac McCarthy, the legendary former men's basketball coach at UT Chattanooga, who led the Mocs to their 1997 appearance in the NCAA Tournament's Sweet 16 round. And as you'll hear, the Sweet 16 will be in the spotlight during this round of NCAA Bracket Busters with Weeds and Mac. Here's your host, Chattanoogan.com sports columnist, Mark Wiedmer.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome back to the Bracket Busters podcast with Mac and Weeds. We're about to head into the round of Sweet 16. So, Mac, right off the bat, give me your best moment or oddest moment from these first weekend of games.
Golly, it's hard to pick one moment, to be honest, but I was sitting here getting ready for the show, and I'm thinking, like you were saying earlier off the air, that it was a wild weekend, but was it really? When you get down to it, we had some upsets. You had Furman and Princeton and Fairleigh Dickinson and Florida Atlantic. But really, on the other side of the bracket, in the Midwest and the West, we had some sevens and tens and eights and nines and fours and fives. But my big take from the first weekend is that when we're going to the Sweet 16, only eight Power Five teams are left. I kind of thought it would go a little bit differently, and I guess we should have expected some chaos after this crazy season where nobody could hold on to number one.
I agree with you, Mac. I mean, I think when you look back on the regular season, this was kind of what we all expected, but we've had a lot of years where we've expected that and not seen anything like the results we have right now with these 16 teams left and playing for spots for the Elite Eight and then the Final Four. You kind of predicted Furman, Virginia a week ago. You thought that would be a great game. It certainly was. The game that shocked me, and maybe it shouldn't have, was Arizona-Princeton.
Yeah, Arizona-Princeton, and I didn't know enough about Princeton. I've kind of followed the Ivy League a little bit and knew that they were having a really good year overall. They had a number of pretty good teams, but I didn't know Princeton was as good as they are. They don't look like your typical Ivy League team to me, and I guess nobody really was totally shocked by Fairleigh Dickinson over Purdue just because Purdue was vulnerable, but Fairleigh Dickinson didn't win a regular season. They didn't win a tournament, and then they go in there and beat Purdue with probably the player of the year in Zach Edey. So that was my biggest surprise. But I thought Furman would play close. They've got a good team. And of course, we got our Furman buddies, Gary Davis and Alec Taylor. We got to take care of them. But Virginia keeps you in the game. Furman was going to be kept in the game, and they had enough firepower to maybe pull something off at the end. And gosh, what a shame for Clark, who's been there forever. He's kind of been an integral piece of all that they've done, but make that big mistake at the end. That's one of the larger mistakes I can remember. The one that comes to mind is the timeout by Weber in the national championship. But gosh, what a boneheaded play by a great kid and a guy who's been a great player for a really good program.
I couldn't agree with you more. I just couldn't believe that throw in like that. I don't know what he was thinking, but I'll give you another one. What in the world was Kendrick Davis thinking when he had the ball late in that Memphis game and tries to throw it cross court? He's the best free throw shooter on the team. Why isn't he just dribbling the ball and getting fouled and going to the line, and Memphis would have won?
Yeah, well, it's called madness for a reason. And the pressure these kids are under and the coaches are under and even the fans are under. I don't know if you media guys are under any pressure or not. Probably.
Oh, yeah, with some of these starting times, you get under a lot of pressure.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, you have to alter your schedule during the tournament. All the cliches apply to March Madness when it comes to the pressure and to the opportunities and to some of the great moments that we've seen already.
And what about the Florida Atlantic and Fairleigh Dickinson game last night? I mean, I don't know when I've watched two teams just go up and down the court like that at that kind of speed. It was really fun basketball to watch.
Yeah, I did a game yesterday, Virginia Tech women, who's a number one seed, and looks like they'll be taking on Tennessee in the next round in Seattle. I was doing that game, so I'm driving back, and even the radio broadcast was exhausting, up and back and up and back. The announcers were having trouble keeping up, and they even commented that they hadn't seen a game like that in a long time.
Oh, it was wild. And I wouldn't say it was always the best played basketball, but it was just breakneck speed from start to finish. I mean, the announcers probably needed a TV timeout to catch their breath.
That's a really good point, because one of the most fun things to me in being an observer and watching this thing, maybe as a former coach, but more as a fan, is that all the contrasting styles that we see. We've seen some ridiculously physical games. We've seen some up and down games. We've seen one team trying to play fast and one team trying to play slow. I love the contrasting styles. And to me, that kind of matchup is as much fun as the individual matchups that we've seen.
I agree. And how much fun would it be to watch, say, FAU play Princeton?
Well, I guess we could see that.
We could. I don't think. Mac, you brought up something just a second ago that I've rarely seen this tournament allowed to be as physical as it was this first weekend in certain games. I know Billis, and I think it's funny to have a Duke guy questioning officiating, but Tennessee-Duke was, to me, way beyond normal officiating for physical play. I mean, it was, as Billis said, a hockey game more than a basketball game.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, you mentioned the Duke thing, but if Shire would just remember to have a Krzyzewski mask over there, he would get some of those calls, I believe. I think the officials have relaxed without Coach K on the sideline a little bit, but I've seen too many physical games. And to be honest, I've been watching a lot of the women's tournament and watched three games in person this weekend. And it's really the same thing. It not only affects the quality of watching the game, but it affects the outcome of these games too, because some teams are built to go deep. Some teams are built to play physically. Some teams are built a little bit more finesse. And it's a real advantage or disadvantage depending on your perspective in both these tournaments that are going on.
Yeah, I agree. And there's no uniformity. It's unreasonable to expect these teams to adjust that much in one game. Some of this officiating, it's like if you don't draw blood, it's not a foul.
Yeah, we've seen some blood drawn in this tournament. The thing they emphasized for the last 10 years or so is the freedom of movement, and that's non-existent anymore. You see all kind of contact on screens, coming off screens, and where you see an awful lot of it is ball screens and dribble handoffs. The defenders have learned to anticipate that and to really get up into the ball handler or to the person coming off of the dribble handoff. It's really ridiculous, and they've called a few dribble handoff offensive fouls and that kind of thing. But when both teams are being so aggressive, I will give the officials this. It is hard to determine who in the heck started this thing.
I agree. It's like we're watching the 94 Knicks out there. There's going to be a body check on every trip down court. And to me, the worst part, I mean, I don't mind physical basketball games, but when you're affecting guys' shots at the rim, I think that's gone too far.
Yeah, you have to protect the shooters. And the other thing, though, about the physical play, and I'll be interested to see what you think about this, is it's so easy, if you're going to allow them to play really physically, it's awfully easy to take post players completely out of this game. The only way post players are involved is if they run the floor or get offensive rebounds. They're not part of the offense anymore. So now the tournament, which it usually does in some way or another, comes down to guard play and somebody being able to get their own shot. And if I want to watch somebody go one-on-one and get their own shot, I'll turn to the NBA. I don't need to watch college basketball.
No, I agree with you. I think the post play at times has been ridiculous. And again, I've preached for years, there needs to be one officiating body. We've got all these different officiating crews, different conferences, different organizations. They all ref differently. I mean, you and I go back to a time when the ACC was a finesse league and the Big Ten was a physical league. And the SEC was wretched as always because it's the worst officiated league in the country. But there was, at least when you got into the tournament, you kind of knew what to expect. Now you don't. And I think it really hurts the game.
And I don't know the answer to that other than I think it should be nationalized. I do agree with that part. You could still have your ACC group or your Big 12 group or whatever. You could still have your regular people by region or whatever. But these guys are calling in every league anyway. So I don't really know why they can't do it. I know they're independent contractors and the leagues like to have control. But at some point, and again, this is a bigger picture thing that we're talking about, when is somebody going to do what what's good for the game rather than what's good for their school or their league.
You're right, Mac. And we're kind of in an era, and this goes across a lot more than basketball, where everybody does what's good for them and nobody worries about the common good. I don't want to get too political here, but we're in a selfish society right now.
You can apply it to whatever, but I'm talking about college sports in general. We have big time decision makers, some of the most powerful people in the game. And I know we're veering off path just a little bit, but again, decisions are being made about what's good for their university or their league, not what's good for college athletics in general. And I don't know what this new president of the NCAA is going to be like, but I hope this is one of the things he addresses. And now back to March Madness.
Mac, let's go ahead and get into the brackets. One of the things that fascinated me when I was looking at starting times is you've got both number one seeds playing in early games rather than late games. Houston goes at 7:15 on Friday. Bama goes at 6:30 on Friday on TBS. Does it surprise you that the only two number one seeds left are not going to be those 9 o'clock slots?
Yeah, a little bit. TV has been kind of interesting in this tournament and the women's tournament about game times. And of course, we know television is going to dictate exactly what goes on. But yeah, I am surprised that they wouldn't be more in quote unquote prime time.
It gives you a sense of how much the country really wants to watch either Houston or Bama play. Let's just start off with the Thursday games, though. You've got the West and the East on Thursday. And when you look at the East, do you see a potential problem for Tennessee against Florida Atlantic?
No, not really. Tennessee is sort of built for what's going on with the physicality part of it. As long as they're allowed to do that and they can hold the opponent down, I think they can score enough to beat a team, while talented, is not an SEC caliber team. I think Coach Barnes is putting to rest all those March theories about his record in the past. There are a lot of people that don't win games in March. I think we fail to remember that. Tony Bennett has gotten beat in the first or second round a whole lot of different times, but he's got that one national championship. Villanova, if they don't win the national championship, they go out early almost every single year. And Jay Wright was the king of kings. I think Coach Barnes' reputation has been a little bit unfair to him, just in my opinion.
Well, and to that same point, there was a long stretch in there with Bill Self that they were out in the first or second round at least half the time. Then he wins it in 08 thanks to Memphis's missed free throws, and then comes back and wins it last year, which I would say at least a little bit was due to Armando Bacot's sprained ankle. But I mean, he's put on a Hall of Fame run and been in Elite Eights and Final Fours often since he kind of got out of that first and second round jinx. Go to K-State and Michigan State. Tom Izzo, I don't know of any coach who consistently gets more out of his kids than he does.
Yeah, when you start talking about March Madness, you think about two things mainly. You think about guard play and you think about coaches who do well in the tournament. And it seems like Michigan State always has those things. They've got a guard, and I'm going to lose his name right here, but a transfer from Northeastern who I've called a lot of his games, and he's just an outstanding player. And Izzo has him ready to play this time of year. And he's got a fairly favorable draw to get back to the Final Four with Kansas State. Yeah, they're a neat story. And pretty darn talented. They could win the game, but you kind of have to like Michigan State out of these four teams, don't you?
I think so, too. And is the kid you're talking about Walker?
Yes.
He's an excellent all-round guard. Offensively, defensively, can hit the three on occasion. And one of those kids that seems to get better the bigger the moment.
Yeah, he's been good for a long time, and you have to obviously keep up with who is where. But I did a bunch of his games in the past few years, and I've kind of followed and kept up with him a little bit.
And they don't play, I think, a particularly entertaining style, but they're so mentally tough and physically strong. They're just a team that wears you down. Whether they win or lose, it's a rock fight when you come out of a game with them.
Yeah, and they're one of those teams that really expect to win in March, period. That's why they went there. And that means a lot. It really does.
Mac, if Tennessee advances to the regional final and they draw either one of those teams, but particularly Michigan State, what worries you about their ability to advance to their first Final Four ever?
just the fact that they can just go so cold. They make up for that with defense and scoring some off turnovers. They're pretty good on the offensive glass. And the games are going to be relatively low scoring because of how well they do guard you. Even if they're not turning you over, you're going deep in the shot clock every single time too. But we've seen them this year just go cold to the point where even in a low scoring game, they can't get enough to get over the hump. That's the only thing that keeps them from going to the Final Four, because I'm not so sure that they're not the most talented team left out of those four overall. And it is Tyson Walker. I was scrambling around to try to get that young man's name at Michigan State.
Mac, if you look at the West Regional, to me, two of the very best games left in the Sweet 16 come out of that region, with Arkansas, UConn, and then Gonzaga, UCLA. How do you look at each of those games?
Well, they're the most interesting two games. I agree with that. UConn has had three different seasons. They played great. They played not so good. They started to play good again. So they're really interesting. Most of the season, they were a one seed, and they end up being a four seed, and nobody that's getting to play them should be happy about that. And Arkansas, you know, I don't know. I heard Kermit Davis today on the radio call Musselman the worst winner in college basketball. And he went on to say how much he respected the job he's done and all that kind of thing. But he got his point across, too, with the shirtless and the quick handshakes and all the sideline antics of Musselman. But those kids play hard as heck. They're as athletic as anybody. And those two things will get you by a lot of nights. It's not unlike, even though it's a different style of play, they're not unlike the old days when they were making the Final Four before.
I was just going to say that, Mac, when you go back to the 40 minutes of hell with Nolan Richardson, on offense, they were so loosey-goosey, they'd be all over you on defense, but he gave those guys a lot of freedom, and you see that a lot in this Arkansas team.
Yeah, they are really similar. Not necessarily the pressing and all-out gambling on defense, but it's almost like you make a deal. You play really hard, we'll let you do whatever you want to on offense. You see a little bit of that with Bruce Pearl sometimes, but certainly Nolan Richardson has to be smiling, because they do look a lot like the Razorbacks of old.
Oh, they really do. And all Musselman needs is cowboy boots. Nolan Light.
Hey, don't tempt him.
Yeah, I agree with you. What about, I go back to, I guess, the first tournament after the COVID year, and UCLA loses on a really controversial block charge call against Gonzaga in the semis. That call puts it in overtime. Do you see UCLA looking at a little revenge here in this conference semifinal?
I think Mick Cronin will play whatever chip on the shoulder thing he can do. His theory of the conspiracy about them not being a one seed because they're leaving to go to the Big Ten was one of the dumber conspiracy theories I've ever heard. But hey, he gets them to play hard too. They're an experienced team. They've been there. They've had big wins. They get great point guard play. They lost their best defender. I think that will hurt them. I think the thing in this game that's interesting, though, is Gonzaga. They're under the radar. They're never under the radar. They're one of the folks that people are predicting to win it all, and then they're mad when they don't win it all because they messed their bracket up. This time, they're kind of coming out of the shadows a little bit. Other than Timmy, I don't know that folks know anybody on this team, and usually you know a bunch of their guys because they got a bunch of pros. Well, they don't have a bunch of pros this time, but they're still playing really good basketball.
And they are so deep.
Yeah, you got a guy like Malachi Smith, who Chattanooga fans know really well, coming off the bench. That's a heck of a sub to bring in now. That guy has made some big plays in his playing career.
Oh, and he was maybe the difference maker when they got St. Mary's in the conference tournament. I think he came off to get 14 or 16 points, and he seems happy in his role. He comes in and plays hard every night. I agree with you, and you go back in the regular season, and Gonzaga beat Bama by 10 points.
I think you're right about Malachi. I think he has adjusted to that role, and now he really is giving them quality production almost every time he goes in.
If you get to that final in that regional, who do you like? You like Arkansas or UConn to advance? I like UConn, and then I actually kind of think UCLA may get Gonzaga. That UCLA team's been together, the nucleus of it, for three seasons now, with Tiger Campbell at point and the big kid in the middle, Jaime Jaquez. I mean, not many people have that for three straight seasons.
No, you're exactly right. It is an old team. And of course, there are quite a few old teams in the league because of COVID year and the transfer portal. But yeah, I've had to readjust my thinking because I was pretty sure Kansas was going to be there. So I'm not totally positive, but I'm still kind of liking Gonzaga to sneak in there. And they might end up being the fourth best team that's left in that region. But I still think, again, those kids go there thinking they're going to compete for a national championship too. This is a strong region, and Arkansas has got the least experience and the least expectations probably, but none of these four would shock me if they end up in Houston.
It wouldn't me either, Mac. And I have thought at times, a point you made, UConn at times looks like they can win it all. They don't really have a weakness, and they've got a force in the middle, particularly defensively. And when they hit shots, they look pretty good. And they look a lot like the UConn tradition of just being awfully hard-nosed.
Yeah, I heard somebody in a deep discussion today, in modern basketball, are they a blue blood? You can make the argument that they are.
Oh, they won four?
I think so.
I think Calhoun won three, and then they got the fourth. We're going to move along now, and I'm going to poke a little bit at your Tigers, Auburn Tigers. They're fun to watch. Bruce Pearl at times does a terrific job with that program. But what in God's name was the NCAA thinking allowing them to play in Birmingham against a number one seed when they're a ninth seed? And I know they had to win a game to get there, but how could you overlook that as a selection committee?
Yeah, I don't understand it. Kelvin Sampson didn't understand it. And then the Auburn folks came back and said, well, Kelvin had Houston and San Antonio. Well, you need to look at a map of the state of Texas. That wasn't exactly a drive to Birmingham. But yeah, I didn't understand that at all. And it made for a great day for the barbecue cartel in Birmingham, like we talked about last week. And it probably made a great day for the scalpers, the third-party ticket folks, because those tickets were really hard to get. But they shouldn't have been allowed to be there, or Houston should have been somewhere else.
Well, it brings me back to one of the more painful moments of my life as a Kentucky follower. In 86, LSU, which gets into the tournament as an 11th seed, gets to play their first two games in Baton Rouge, barely wins both games, and then ends up getting to play Kentucky a fourth time in Atlanta and goes to the Final Four. It was a great story with Ricky Blanton and all, but I don't know why an 11th seed should ever play a game on its home court in the NCAA tournament.
And what year was that?
86.
That's Louisville winning?
Louisville won it.
A little extra pain for you?
Yeah, not really so much that. The LSU pain was much more direct, Mac.
I got you.
To that point, though, I have rarely seen a team 10 down at halftime look as overwhelming as Houston did that second half Saturday night.
Yeah, and like Alabama, they can just do so many different things, especially when they're clicking on offense, which their defense really feeds their offense an awful lot because they do turn you over and get some things in transition. And they're so athletic on the offensive glass, but they can go one-on-one late in the shot clock and get a quality shot. Kelvin's got a really good team, and them going back to play in Houston would be a crazy story and a really big-time story, but they've got some work to do. I don't think they'll have a great deal of difficulty with Miami, to be honest, but they've got Texas looming out of that other bracket, and they're a force also.
Yeah, and Texas kind of has that look of magic about them with fighting every game for their coach to get the job permanently. Carr is a terrific late-game point guard. They just have this kind of aura about them this year that you see teams have sometimes.
Yeah, winning the Big 12 tournament, I think, was a big deal. And Rodney Terry is one of the really good stories. And his predecessor getting Ole Miss is a really big story. I don't know how good a story it is. But again, that's probably a different podcast.
Yeah, that goes back to the original conversation we had about nothing's important but me now. Mac, let's look now at the Friday-Sunday games. We've talked about Houston a little bit in the Midwest, but Bama in the South, a very physical San Diego State team and blessed with a lot of good athletes. Is that a danger game for Bama?
No. Brian Dutcher does a great job replacing Coach Fisher there for all those years after winning the national championship at Michigan. And he's done a super job, waited his time. And gosh, they're a typical San Diego State team. You saw them against Furman. They've got athletes all over the place. They play with a degree of toughness, but they've got some skill too. But Alabama just comes at you in waves of athletes and size. And
Brandon Miller.
We've seen Alabama do this for years. years now. I mean, back to Wimp and even CM days. And I remember a lot of Alabama teams where the best shot was a second shot because you just throw it up on the rim and let them go get it and put it back in the basket. And then they guard the heck out of you on the other end. You can't get a good shot. You can't get a second shot. Alabama's got a pretty good path to Houston.
Well, if you want to know how good they are, in the first game of the tournament, I think they hit 15 threes and Brandon Miller didn't score a point.
Yeah, so maybe the best player in the country didn't have to hit a lick.
Now, this game fascinates me for a number of reasons. For one thing, I love to watch Creighton play. I think they do a terrific job, particularly on offense. Any basketball junkie enjoys watching Princeton play because they're so precise. They run their offense so well. Who do you like in this game?
Eventually, the Cinderella has to go home, and I think they will. There are three Big East teams left in the Sweet 16, and that league was really legitimately good this year. A team like Villanova, who had a lot of players back, didn't even have a winning record in the league. The thing that interests me about Creighton is how in the world did Coach McDermott not get it done at Iowa State? This guy can coach his tail off. They always look the same. They've always got really good shooters. They run great offense. They're always physically and mentally tough, and I see them advancing, and again, they're going to run into that athletic machine that Nate Oates has over there in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, and Creighton, and I'm drawing a blank on his name, their pivot is one of the most unappreciated big men in the country, and I think will have a really good NBA career. Mac, let's just assume we know what we're doing picking the Final Four, and we don't. I still like Bama to win it all. Do you feel the same way?
I do. My two in the championship game are still alive. That's all I've got left, but I've got Bama and Texas in the championship game. I hate to even pick against Kelvin Sampson because I think they're really good, and I really like him as a guy and as a coach. He's from over here in eastern North Carolina, not far from us originally. And I had Duke and Kansas. That was really smart. That didn't make much sense, but Michigan State with Izzo looks like the pick there, and I'm still going under the radar with Gonzaga to make it.
Mac, one point, because you were such a great coach for so long. How much did Bill Self not being on the bench affect Kansas, do you think?
Well, I heard this point made today by several Big 12 quote-unquote experts, people that really do cover the league. And the thing that he's most well known for in coaching circles is being a guy who can call the right play or get the right mismatch after a timeout or coming out of the halftime break or baseline out of bounds, that kind of thing. As good as Coach Roberts probably is, he still probably doesn't have that feel that Bill Self does. And I think he pretty much admitted that in the postgame interviews and that kind of thing. I think you'd be crazy not to say he wasn't worth at least 2 points.
That was kind of my thought, and I go back to when they were trying to run the play at the end, and Arkansas smartly fouled Wilson rather than giving him a chance to hit a three. But I thought Self would have drawn up a different play.
Yeah, and that brings up another point. I don't want to get off your point about Bill Self, but please foul, coaches. Please, please foul. Don't go down to the and give that other team a chance.
No, I agree with you completely. I don't understand that. When you've got the situation Arkansas had, I don't know why you'd let somebody shoot a three. And then you had, what an odd thing, he tries to miss the second free throw and banks it in.
Oh, yeah. You see that fairly often.
And you see that fairly often. That's such a hard play to make.
And missing shots would be easy for you and me.
Oh, yeah. But I'd miss the first one, and then that'd ruin everything. Well, Mac, I know you're headed west for Virginia Tech in the women's draw. You feel like you might go to the Final Four there?
Well, actually, we didn't get the plans made in time to go to Seattle. But if they do make it to Dallas, I will be on the radio call in Dallas. But they've got to beat Tennessee and UConn in Seattle. That's a tall task, no matter what kind of year those programs are having.
Yes, and Tennessee looks like they're beginning to find themselves. And UConn finally, for the first time all year, I think, is healthy. And they've had just a horrible run of injuries. So you get Geno a full roster, that's pretty scary to go against.
Yeah, it is. And Virginia Tech did beat Tennessee earlier in the year in Knoxville. But again, I think they've kind of reinvented themselves. They look like they're playing at a pretty darn high level. They're beating people really badly.
Well, the Jackson girl has really taken off, and she was great at Miss State. She looks even better in that orange, unfortunately.
Well said.
Well, Mac, thanks for all the time, and enjoy the rest of the second week of the tournament.
Look forward to next week, guys.
All right. Everybody else, have a great week.
Thanks for joining us for NCAA Bracket Busters with Weeds and Mac, a special podcast series from Pod Topics Chattanooga, produced in collaboration with thechattanoogan.com. This series is being presented exclusively through thechattanoogan.com. Be sure to check the sports section of thechattanoogan.com for the release of the next episode in our series.